Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-Hour Home Care. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pop Health Podcast. This is Gavin Ward alongside co-host Zach Morgan. Morning, Zach.
Good morning.
And we are here in Irvine, California, the site of our very first Pop Health Podcast recording back in 2015, and we're almost up to 40 episodes now, so just would really like to take this time to thank the audience for all the downloads and all the recommendations of great guests that we have. And today, we are actually referred to these folks from one of our friends in the industry, Dr. Bob Slay, who's an emergency department medicine over at Providence Little Company of Mary, where he actually works or has worked alongside one of our guests today. And our guests are Dr. Emily Scott and Dr. James Gaor, who are here to share about their practice in direct primary care. And let's start with Emily. Emily, tell us a little bit about what direct primary care is.
So direct primary care is the concept that you are directly involved with your patients in payment. So really this stems from, I'll give a little background as to how we came to where we are. So I was initially working in a typical model, seeing 25, 30 patients a day, having the 15-minute visits that really turn into 3 to 4 minutes of quality time with your patient, and finding myself frustrated with the ability for me to deliver quality care. And I worked in a very innovative group, and we were looking at ways to make this work. Can we work with teams? Can we use physician extenders? What else can we do to make this work? And I kept coming back around to the idea that as long as the underlying business model was paying for this volume rather than value, which is a common theme in healthcare these days, that we would not really be able to deliver the care that I felt was necessary. So James and I began to research more about this and read Dave Chase, who's a big advocate for direct primary care, and decided that in order to make a true change, and what I see as a fast forward to where healthcare should be, was to work in this business model of direct primary care, where you are paid, in many cases, directly from a patient for a monthly fee that gives you coverage for all the services that you provide. And what that allows you to do is it allows you to bring down your overhead as a physician so that then you can take a smaller panel of patients and provide them care that's more efficient and more comprehensive. You don't have to bring people in for every little thing. You can do more access on the phone and through messaging, and we can use different technology because now I'm not beholden to the billing that's involved with the traditional insurance-based type of system.
Very good. And how did you two come up with the idea? Well, you mentioned it a little bit, Emily, but how about you, James? What kind of got you into direct primary care?
Well, my background is emergency medicine. So really, my specialty sees a lot of what the failures of the traditional healthcare system has. So a lot of people come to the emergency department because there is no access. They're unable to see their primary care physician. We provide incredible care for everybody that walks through the door, but realizing these are downstream effects of a broken healthcare system. And seeing Emily, since we're married, coming home, working incredibly hard, serving her patients, there's an opportunity to create a solution. So my interest is that in entrepreneurship, healthcare, technology, and I saw this as a great opportunity to really create something that can be a solution to this problem.
Very good. So you guys have been married about 13 years?
Yes.
Yep.
Is what I understand. And you met in med school?
Met in college.
UC
San Diego. That was almost 18 years ago. We met in college. We were bioengineers together, working on projects in the coffee shop. Initially, my personal ambitions were not necessarily to become a doctor, but kind of my path changed throughout the years, and really wanted to be involved really with dealing with patients and interacting with the community more than engineering itself. So that's when I decided to pursue medicine.
Okay, very good. So you folks have been married about 13 years. You got married while you were in medical school, met at UCSD. two children.
Yep.
Yes.
5 and 7.
Yep.
And you also have a third member there that you treat, I guess, as like a child. Tell us about that.
We have a cat. We were talking about our cat earlier, who's quite grumpy, and we say she's a personality test because when people come to our house, we see how hard they try to get our cat to be nice to them. They're often not successful.
And if I know anything about cats, the less you try, probably the more attention the cat pays to you. So
that's pretty much, she just likes to be looked at.
Yeah.
Very good. So tell us about the development of your practice, kind of maybe where you are now, how many patients you're seeing. Are you growing? Where's your kind of population of patients that you're seeing?
So we've been open for 7 months now. And initially, a lot of the patients that joined us were patients that knew me from the community. And we have since then been able to build up just through Yelp, honestly, and people looking online for a primary care doctor. We haven't spent any money on marketing. So our growth has been very organic, word of mouth, people referring other people after they've had an experience with us. So we're up to about 230 patients now, about 7 months in, which was beyond our goal. We had set some goals, and we're very pleased with our growth, and it's been going really well.
Very good. Well, exciting to see that.
So obviously with any sort of new and innovative business model, there are going to be hurdles or challenges to overcome. What sort of challenges have you faced? I mean, obviously you're building up your patient population faster than it sounds like you had even planned or hoped to. But what other kind of challenges have you faced with such an innovative idea?
I think one is just really communicating the idea. It is a new idea for a lot of people to really understand. You want us to pay directly. I have insurance. Why do I need to pay for a primary care physician? So I think educating the community of the value of a practice like ours and similar practices is really, I think, the biggest challenge for us. I think it's been a great reception, but I think communicating that message has been the biggest challenge.
It's also true that people have this expectation from a primary care doctor that I think is pretty pathetic, because their experience has been they go in, not always, I don't want to say universally, but it's a common experience that people go in, the doctor has 3 minutes, they type a few things in the computer, they give them a prescription or referral, and they're out. And there's not this thought that perhaps their primary care doctor can do more. And for me, that's been very difficult to communicate, because people don't know it until they experience it. Because I can talk until I'm blue in the face that I can offer more if I have more time, but they're not going to trust it until they experience it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have had a lot more time to really talk to people. We have an electronic specialty consult service that we use, where I can, if someone comes to me and I'm not sure what the next step is, I can go online and consult specialists in many, many different specialties and get a response back that helps guide my care. So helps me wait to refer until it's absolutely necessary.
And we were talking with a colleague of ours yesterday, and how really this model of care allows primary physicians to practice to the top of their game,
yeah.
Right? So the system right now has really been pressuring primary physicians to, like what Emily had just mentioned, you know, quick visits, try to make a quick assessment, a prescription, maybe a lot of specialty referrals when they don't necessarily need them, whereas really primary physicians are trained to know a lot and handle a lot. And I think direct primary care in particular allows physicians to practice at that level.
And you see, you know, patients, they come to you, I think they talk about physician dissatisfaction a lot. And part of that stems from my experience, when many physicians are very well-intentioned. You know,
yeah.
they want to get satisfaction out of their career by helping their patients. They really do. And so when you're in this situation where you're constantly put up against barriers that make it difficult to be effective, it drains you. And
right.
So, you know, my experience has been patients in my prior practice, I give them a prescription, they come back a month later, they're not taking it, their blood pressure's still high. Okay, take this other pill. You know, they don't tell me they're not taking it. Now I prescribe two things, they're not taking either of them. And this model is such a flip, because you can really disarm people by giving the power to them, giving them the chance to really talk about what's going on. And when you have that trust with someone, now you can really be effective. So maybe this person would never take a drug, ever, no matter what I said. And so now I need to approach it differently and really understand how I can help them manage their care differently. We can talk about, you know, their diet, those kinds of other things.
Okay, so you talked about earlier, you talked about overhead And we know with medical practices, you know, there's usually a lot involved with billing and coding and things like that. So I'm curious about the structure of your practice or what you anticipate the structure to be. You've grown quite a bit. I believe you're still taking new patients from what I understand. So tell us about the structure.
So the structure is, it's pretty simple. She kind of, Emily alluded to it earlier, patients pay a monthly fee. We use a platform called Hint Health to really handle all our billing.
Okay.
Really it's just patients or our patient care coordinator, Julie, will enter credit card information and the platform will essentially bill on a monthly basis at the end of the month for the services.
Okay.
And that's the billing structure of it. And that's basically it. So we do not collect co-pays. There's no dependence on any type of coding structure for reimbursement. It's a monthly fee that covers comprehensive primary care services. There's some minor procedures that Emily might need to do, like skin biopsies that we can charge, and we have transparent pricing on a fee-for-service type of model. But really, it's a monthly billing structure through this platform.
Okay.
So the overhead's really low.
Yeah, we really, I mean, what we pay for on a monthly basis, we're paying for our rent, which is our biggest expense. We're paying for our one staff member. And we have some nominal fees for our technology and medical insurance. You know, these things overall add up to a very low overhead. In my prior practice, I was amazed at, I think that our complete overhead is the cost of probably half the cost of the lease in my last practice, which was not large either.
Wow.
So, you know, it's been fantastic, allowed us to reach at least neutral cash flow or,
positive,
you know,
yeah,
within 4 to 5 months of opening the practice.
Right. And, you know, there's a statistic, I believe, I don't know if it's correct, but 6-to-1 ratio of administrator to physician. Just nationwide. I mean, I think that's averaged across all specialties and different systems. But, you know, we have a 1-to-1 ratio, technically, I mean, with Julie and Emily. So
very good. And where do patients come from that you serve? I believe your practice is here. Is it Irvine, Costa Mesa? Where's the your practice located?
So we are in Irvine.
Okay.
We're close to Hoag Hospital. We're also close to the UCI campus. We get patients, a lot of them are from local, from Irvine, Costa Mesa, Newport. But we also get patients coming from very far away. We have people who have read about direct primary care online and found our practice and are coming to us from San Bernardino, from Redondo Beach, from San Clemente. So we get people from far reaches, and it works because of our ability to do that sort of telehealth that, you know, you come in for the first visit and we establish trust and rapport and we spend a lot of time, but then after that, should you need things, we can do everything we can to do it virtually.
Okay.
So how does, with the utilization of the technology and having that be such a big part of the primary care, what would you say is the split of people coming in to the office, or how is your time split? Is most of your time now spent, you know, with fewer patients but still seeing people face to face, or do you spend a significant amount of time doing things remotely? How do you find your time split now?
Yeah, that's a good question. So from what we understand in a typical direct primary care practice is in the beginning you have a lot more face-to-face as you're growing. So some days I will see 10 people in the office. Most days it's somewhere between 2 and 6 people that I see face-to-face. I will have interaction with technology, phone call, messaging with anywhere between 10 and 30 patients a day. And those go quickly because it's just a quick response to, you know, looking at someone's blood pressure. We're tracking health measures. So I have reminders for you got to go look at Bob's blood pressure tomorrow. You got to check Jane's blood sugar. So, you know, I'm doing those things that go quickly.
Very good. And go ahead, Zach.
Well, you were talking about technology. We talked about the billing technology that you use. But one thing I think that a lot of people are very cognizant of now as things move in a towards technology, especially in healthcare, is things like patient privacy or the word hacking gets thrown around a lot, especially it seems like recently. What kind of systems do you use to be able to communicate with your patients and, you know, keep their information safe and so that they can feel comfortable communicating with you remotely?
So all the services we use are definitely HIPAA compliant and comply with all the privacy standards that and exceed the privacy standards of what's expected out there. We've been really excited to partner with Twine Health, which is basically a collaborative care platform. And that's really the hub of how we communicate with our patients, how Emily stays in touch with them. They've done a fantastic job of really focusing on being able to have patients be engaged and be in control of their health. So action plans in terms of what they want in terms of their healthcare needs, be able to track that through their platform. And it allows Emily to communicate. So that's also the hub of our messaging. So everything that we do with our practice is focused on enhancing relationships with our patients. So we consider this more relationship-centered care. It's not just patient-centered care. It's really how are we creating trust with the community and our patients. And so communication and transparency is really key to that. And so technology, like you had mentioned, is enables us to do that in a way that hasn't been done in a lot of healthcare settings.
So messaging, is there also like video conferencing or all of that?
Yes, we have that available. Surprisingly, nobody uses it. So it is an offering. I don't know if it's maybe we haven't really sold it as much, but you know, patients haven't really used that. Yet as much. But another key piece I wanted to bring up is really transparent health records. So when Emily sees a patient, she writes the note through this platform. It pops up on their phone, and so everything that we do is transparent to the patient. They see her entire note. They see what they discussed, what their plan is, and we really feel that really truly engages patients. You know, there's no barrier anymore. There's no record in the back of an office like what did they talk about.
Yeah.
I think it's really important that patients understand what we're thinking, making sure we got it right, that we got the plan correct, and if there's any corrections, we invite people like correct us, please. Did we get that wrong? Did we understand that correctly? And
It comes to this concept of, you know, what I was talking about, that frustration as a primary care doctor, that you tell a person to take a medication and they leave and they go, forget about it. So how can we be more engaging with our patients? And one of the things that Twine says that made us want to partner with them more is that when patients lead, we all win. And so that's part of we talked about earlier before we started this about how I want people to call me Emily, because I think it's important for people to see me as a trusted advisor, not someone to fear or be intimidated by. And then I can be that much more effective because they let their guard down. And having this transparent information, what we say to them is, this is your health record, and you need to be responsible for your health. And so help me make this correct for you. Please look at my note. Tell me what I did wrong. Tell me, you know, what information makes sense to you. And it's working very well. It's really been very successful.
Yeah, we were, like Emily mentioned, we were talking off air about first name basis, which you know, Zach and I are in the healthcare space, and we don't see that all the time with physicians, even my own physician that I've known for a little bit. So I think it really does humanize you, even though you're kind of a medical authority in a sense. It does bring you more to that advisor level. We frequently use the term, whether it's trusted advisor like you used, or strategic partner.
Mm-hmm.
I like those terms versus authority and subordinate or anything like that.
Right. And it's, you know, another doc that we really respect, Dr. Robert Lamberts, he's doing a similar thing over in Georgia. He said, if people know that you're human, they won't expect you to be superhuman, right? And as a physician, that's really valuable. You know, I'm a human being. I'm not perfect. I can do a very good job taking care of people and learning and researching and doing my best for people, but I'm not going to know everything.
Sure.
And people need to understand that. I think that when people have unrealistic expectations of what their physician can do, it also gets us all into trouble.
Yeah.
So with kind of breaking down those barriers and adding in the availability via technology, whether it's messaging or video conferencing, does it create kind of a different expectation for your availability? Do people expect you to be available at night and on weekends? And, you know, has it turned into more of a 24/7 commitment for you? Or are you able to kind of hold those expectations in check?
Yeah, so it's a great question, because that's what everybody always asks. So what about those people that are going to abuse you? What do you mean you're going to be on call all day? And I think I have been called on my cell phone, I could count on my hand, over the past 8 months since we started, 7.5 months. And with the messaging app, because there's this asynchronous communication, because they have this comfort that I am going to get back to them, they trust that, there's not this pressure to call me all the time.
Yeah.
And so really people are only calling me the majority of the time when there really is a true urgent issue.
Sure.
That has been very successful. And I tell people I will respond to you within one business day with our messaging app. And if I do not, please message me again. But then I'm able to batch my work so I can, instead of feeling like I'm constantly messaging people all the time, I can put it together at one time and get back to them.
And as a parent, that's great.
Absolutely.
My wife tells me to turn off my phone because, you know, always looking at work emails, things like that. Sounds like you have you've decided to do that. Even though you are having this private practice, you can spend time with the family, not be on call. Your patients aren't expecting you to always answer.
And that's the other thing we talk about that's really important is if you are going to be a healthcare provider, you need to be a model of health. And so we try really hard to practice, and we have to work at stuff, you know, and there's always more to work on, but to live that balanced, healthy lifestyle. And if I'm getting burnt out, I'm not going to be successful as a physician. So we try to do everything we can to keep that in balance.
That's really great. So earlier you talked about reimbursement and how folks are paying you. I believe, whether it was on air or off air, we talked about, I believe, $39 to $99. Tell us how that's decided.
The payment is based on age. So, you know, it's an interesting thing, I think, in direct primary care across the country. You'll get different constructs of how people pay for this. And I think it's a challenge in the traditional system, too. How do you decide risk? How do you decide who's going to use the most and how much do you pay for have them pay? And so we're using age as a marker for utilization. And it doesn't always line up perfectly. You know, sometimes I have 20-somethings who are calling me every day and sometimes not calling me, messaging me every day.
Right.
And sometimes I have 70-year-olds who I don't hear from at all. But you pay based on age. So it starts at $39 a month for the very young and then goes up to $99 a month for those above 65. So if you're up to 30 years old, you pay us $39 a month.
Okay.
And that has actually pulled in a big demographic of millennials, young people, who to them, they don't even question it. They come in, oh yeah, this is how it works. I get it. I read it online. They sign up online. They give us their credit card and they walk in and they know exactly what to expect. And James had talked about this, you know, this is a different expectation from these people. So
yeah, just convenience and access. It's like everything else that we use in our lives these days, whether it's Netflix, whether entertainment services, you pay something and you get it when I want it. I want it on my phone, I open the app and it's there, and I give them a credit card number and it's paid for. So it's very simple, it's clean, millennials trust that.
Much
easier.
So, and again, the $39 to $99, if I wanted to come see you, if I was your patient, there's no once a year physical. And then if I'm going to go see you again, there's a copay of, you know, $70 or whatever. They can come set appointments.
Correct.
Pretty much any time they'd like.
And that
Correct.
Was the whole idea that I really was very important to me, because if I'm going to do this, the whole intention was to create a business model where I could feel satisfied with my work, right? We're not going to be bajillionaires doing this. I'm going to make as much as I was making before, but I want to be satisfied with my work. And so how can that be? And it's about lining it up so that I get reimbursed for the quality of work that I do, that I'm not counting services, that I'm not, oh my gosh, Jane called 3 times, I can't talk to her again. You know, that doesn't work. That's not how people work. People are messy. They, you know, you don't know how much care they're going to need. So if you can pay based on quality, and the thing is, it's month to month. People can leave whenever they want, and I wanted that. If you're not happy with my care, if I'm not proving to you that I'm a valuable physician, you have the right to leave. And so my job now is to make sure I'm providing quality care and keeping my patients happy and keeping myself happy. Because if I burn out, I won't be effective. And then as far as how we bill for our procedures, you know, again, my intention was I don't want to make a decision, not that anybody consciously makes a decision, but I don't want any financial gain by doing more procedures. So,
right.
You know, and I also don't want a financial loss. So if I do suturing, I've got to pay for a suture kit and I've got to pay for these things. So how can we be so that it's sort of a financially neutral decision? And that's how we came up with the pricing on our procedures that we do.
Very good.
One thing that I know a lot of primary care physicians struggle with is being able to be kept up on their patient's health, just not even history, just current health. You know, if they go to the hospital, even a lot of times they don't even know that that person was in the hospital or if there are updates on their health. With a lot of your patients being remote, You said even a lot of them live far away. How do you stay up to date on kind of their current health needs and health issues if they're not right there with you? Is there a way that they're, you know, pinged every once in a while to kind of like a reminder, or how are things going? Or with that technology piece, how do you stay in contact with some of those people or stay up to date on what's going on with them?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question, because part of this model allows you to realize that healthcare doesn't happen in the office. Healthcare happens outside. And the people that we have a biased population now, because people that are joining are already engaged with their health. So how do you get those people that are not engaged and pull them in?
Right.
And we have had a number of people in our practice that haven't come back. You know, they've come in once and they're paying us, but
right.
we don't hear from them. And we do keep track of them. We have on Twine, we can see who hasn't read our messages. We can tell who hasn't come back. We have reminders for people to see them regularly. So we'll email them. We'll start calling them. You know, we have a couple people that we've called email. We don't want to harass them, but
that's
if
the
there's
ultimate
something
read receipt, you know, if you haven't been reading your physician's notes.
Right, exactly.
<That's> true.
So it's that fine line between not wanting to harass people, but also making sure that you know that they're there. And if there is something that they should have followed up on, just to remind them gently that we're here. Come on, let's get you back. And
right.
Very good. So you have over 200 patients. You're continuing to take new patients. Any success stories you can share within your first year or so?
I think Emily's got a lot, actually.
What's been so
how
cool.
How much time do you have?
A
few more minutes,
is the before and after. So, you know, seeing these patients that I've cared for years, and I can think of one patient in particular who's been on chronic narcotics, has been high blood pressure, diabetes, and we've finally been able to sit down and really talk about where this is all coming from. And we've finally been able to get through and make a plan to taper down the narcotics. We finally talked about what the blood pressure medications mean and how to take them. And I have been with this person since I came back to California in 2008. And it really has been over the past 8 months that I feel like I've finally made some progress with this person. So instead of having them come in, and, you know, honestly, on my prior schedules, this patient would come in, and I'd see him on my schedule, and I'd be like, okay, I got to just write this prescription and get him out, and then it'll be quick. And then I can move on to the next person and get on with my day. And so that's just felt so good. And then also seeing people that, you know, I had another patient come in who I'm comparing before and after with myself personally, because I think that, I don't know how to put it, but I think doctors need to be... They need more understanding for the pain that they're in and the system that they're in. But I had a patient who had this mass on her CAT scan, and she came to me again, and we had to do a CAT scan for another reason. And I said, oh my gosh, you have a mass. And she said, oh, well, I've had that for a long time. I'm like, you have? She said, yeah, you know, you saw that years ago. And I'm like, I did? And I looked back, and there, sure enough, there it was. And she said, well, I didn't want to follow up on it, so I just didn't. And I had documented it in my note, but I never went back to her on it. And this is a benign thing. The patient's okay.
Yeah.
but you know, I didn't follow up on it. And now in this practice, same thing happened. We found it, and she put me off and kept calling. And we finally are getting her in to re-image this, to look at it. So to see if we can define what it is. But point being that really it makes a huge difference in your ability to be successful and provide quality care when you have the time and when you're not just harried and losing your mind every day.
Very good. So sounds like you're off and running in this first year. I think Zach and I have learned quite a bit about
Absolutely.
What's out there and what's available to the community. I guess my last question would be, how are the healthcare organizations that your patients see, whether it's hospitals or other groups thinking or competing groups thinking of you? Are people seeing you as a resource? Are they worried that you're going to take the patients away? Tell us a little bit about that.
Right now, I don't think there's really any concern from healthcare organizations, the traditional healthcare organizations. I think right now patients are paying for these services, for this valued service, out of pocket. So what they see is valued primary care. At this point in time, there isn't any type of, to be honest, there's just no reaction at this point in time.
Okay.
From our traditional healthcare system around us. I think Emily talked about it with her prior practice, and there's a lot of enthusiasm because
Great.
Really, I think our colleagues are really interested in finding solutions to problems. So at least people who are really in the market to doing so should be excited about people trying different things. And so I think there's more of an enthusiasm. There's a lot of questions I think people have. You know, how is this scalable, right? So how can we implement similar types of workflows for more people is a really interesting question. And one of the things that we're potentially going to do is you know, expand to employers and market to employers so that we can provide these services to small businesses and larger businesses. So that's one of the approaches that we're taking. And we'll see. I think there's a lot of opportunity to collaborate with healthcare organizations, but it's an interesting time because it's a lot of shifts in terms of who's paying for what and how can we achieve the quadruple aim, which is, you know, cost, quality, patient experience, and importantly, Emily mentioned this, provider experience. So we need to have all of these things together, really aligned, and this is one of the ways that we feel is a solution.
Very good.
Fantastic.
Well, we're near the end of our episode today, and again, our audience of healthcare professionals, I'm sure, will be very interested in what you've shared today. If you were in front of, let's say, 1,000 doctors, case managers, social workers, and you had an elevator speech about why direct primary care, in about 30 seconds or so, Emily, James, what's kind of the key takeaway or the key message you'd like to get across?
I think looking at a model of practice that is, I think, the most well-aligned, so it doesn't have malaligned incentives, and allows you to create a trusting relationship between physician and patient, which really is where the value is in providing good healthcare.
I'll just say, you know, direct primary care is a model that focuses on establishing trust and relationship. And when you focus on those things in a healthcare system, you can achieve that quadruple aim that I just mentioned, decreasing cost, providing quality care, great experience for both patients and physicians. And I think this model is something that's been really fantastic in doing that.
Very good. Well, we really appreciate both Dr. Emily Scott and Dr. James Gaor joining us today. Where can we find out more about your practice?
You can go to our website. It's our company is called Halcyon Health, and Halcyon, the word Halcyon means the times of peace and calm, and so that's what we were trying to create in our practice, and the Halcyon bird is the bird that charms the winter storms into calm. So we are Halcyon Health. It's H-A-L-C-Y-O-N Health. Direct primary care. So if you just Google that, or you can go to halcyonhealthdpc.com, you will find us.
Can you say that site one more time for our audience?
Yeah, it's Halcyon Health DPC, HalcyonHealthDPC for direct primary care.com.
Or on Yelp.
Yep, absolutely. Just, if you Google my
Yelp,
name.
Emily Scott.
Right. Yeah.
Emily with an IE,
by the way. Yes.
Yes. When I first emailed Emily, I put a Y, and I do apologize for
that. Oh, it's all good.
Very good. I think I called James something else, too, your last name. Yeah. It took me a second to pronounce it correctly.
It's a tricky one.
Yeah. Very good. Well, again, Emily and Scott, excuse me, Dr. Emily Scott and Dr. James Gaor, thank you so much for joining us today. And look forward to seeing you guys grow and perhaps have you back in a year or so and see how things are going with direct primary care.
Awesome.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And everyone, before you tune out today, don't forget to download Pop Health Podcast on iTunes or check us out at www.pophealthpodcast.com. Thanks so much, everybody. Take care.